We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. So I literally only have one thing to say about how I feel at the moment, because we've been talking a little bit about this, and the one thing
this show isn't about feelings, Nick.
No, but you asked me on the way up here,
yeah,
how I felt, and I told you
No, hold on. That was my outside world persona.
Right.
Now I'm adopting my podcast persona.
Oh, and your podcast persona really doesn't care how
I
feel.
Don't care at all. I mean, you can tell me. But, you know.
Well, just literally the one thing I want to say.
Yeah. Is that the one thing you want to say? Is that a bit like when you started our other show the other day and said it'd be a short one, and it was 5 minutes shorter than we normally do, coming in just under an hour.
Five whole fucking minutes.
That's
what are
true.
You talking about? The one thing I didn't say to you is the thing I've been thinking is that, like, we're in cold bug and stomach bug season. There just seems to be a lot of bugs around.
Mm. And that's a blooming rip-off as well, isn't it? All of a sudden we have to have cold and flu season. I think, because I don't remember cold and flu season when I was a kid. I think this is like a Hallmark thing.
It is.
I think the card companies have planted the seed of flu and cold season, and I bet you in 5 years' time we're exchanging cold and flu cards.
I definitely think you're on to something, because it used to be that you'd have Christmas.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a few months, and then you'd have Cadbury's Cream Eggs had come out, and you'd have Easter.
No.
And then the summer was summer holidays and colds, inexplicable summer colds.
You're explaining how that works for your lived experience. My lived experience is you have Christmas, the dread and regret of Valentine's.
Right, oh yeah, I forgot about Valentine's.
My birthday, then yeah. Easter.
I think I've always tuned Valentine's Day out a little bit. But anyway, so we're in stomach bug season, apparently.
Cold and flu, I thought you said.
Cold and flu and stomach bug season.
Okay.
And the thing I was thinking, for various reasons just before I met you outside, James, is that when you have anxiety issues, and you also tied into those anxiety issues have a slightly weird relationship with food as well. So
yeah,
that sometimes you're eating too many rich foods at weird times and stuff like that. Sometimes it's really difficult to know whether you've got a 24-hour stomach bug if you've just got a bad stomach.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. The very talented Paul Rainey tweeted one of his Pope Francis cartoons this week. Hold on, let me find it. It's on my telephone, Nick. Okay, so here we go. I favourited it, but I didn't have the favourite option up as a thing. So Paul Rainey, Pope Francis goes to the dentist. And in the strip that he put on Twitter today, Pope Francis has gone to the dentist, hasn't treated the infection properly, needs some more antibiotics, and essentially, well, you'll find out what happens, but it's all very connected to your experiences recently and my experiences recently taking antibiotics. I will forward you the link, Nick.
I thought you were about to launch into your new feature. You know the new feature we've talked about where you...
What, James shits his brains out?
No, where you audio describe a comic strip for visually impaired listeners.
We could do that.
An Audible thing.
Could be. This,
Audible, the service, not just you can hear.
This podcast is brought to you by Finder's Crispy Pancakes.
What were we talking about? I can't remember. It's irrelevant. We'll just move on to the next thing.
I just told you about Paul Rainey's hilarious comic that you're going to add to the show notes. So you could just say, I'll add that to the show notes.
I'll add that to the show notes. So anyway, that's James. Jane, hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Okay.
We've already been talking about my... the listener might not really be aware that I was basically vaguely, euphemistically referring to diarrhea.
He was shitting his brains out and kept me waiting.
Yes. And James, I don't know, we haven't really talked about how he is today. I'm sure he's fine. He's normally okay, isn't he?
Well, I'm on top of the world looking down on creation.
So how are you today, James?
I'm okay. I am a little bit sleepy. But I have a half day tomorrow and everyone keeps asking me at work. And everyone keeps asking me what I'm going to do on my half day. I don't know. I know I have some time I have to take.
Is it in the morning or in the afternoon?
In the afternoon. Who does a half morning?
Oh, man, you should come and hang out.
In the UK.
I know you're not going to, but I mean, I feel like
Well, life partner Steve, I gave him a choice of this Friday or next Friday, and he chose this Friday, so maybe he has a nice romantic surprise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, skyrocketing flight.
Afternoon delight.
Wait, so just to clarify, so he has said that he has also taken this afternoon off?
No, he always has Fridays off.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
And this Friday, baby, I want to get freaky with you. Is what he was probably thinking when he suggested you take this Friday off. Basically, what I'm saying through song and euphemism is it sounds to me very much like Jane and her partner can have lovely sex tomorrow afternoon.
Listeners who aren't in the UK, although I don't think there are that many of you, but listeners who aren't in the UK might not be aware of the, and it's a relatively recent, I think, tradition or holiday in the UK. It lasts for a few weeks in the immediate run-up to the beginning of April, the end of March, beginning of April, which is the your boss has told you need to use up your remaining annual leave.
Oh, no, holiday. This isn't that scenario. No. I'm really, really good about taking up my annual leave.
Okay, right, cool.
I like taking time off, so I'm good at that.
Okay, cool. Well, because we've had a lot of that around here. Every time I've been visiting someone else's office, their boss has like done a drive-by, remember to take your holiday to people.
Which is good. People are entitled to it and they should take it.
Yeah.
But this is time off in lieu.
Oh, because you've been working really hard.
Sounds to me like Nick could do with taking time off for the loo.
Is his tummy in toil?
I took 2 days off for that last week. So
okay. Won't catch me being off sick.
But so you've got a day off, so you're probably half a day. So you're probably feeling quite, and it's just before the weekend, so you get that tiny little bit of an extra.
A little bit, but next week I'll be working 9 days. No, hang on, 7 days. I can't count how many days are in a week.
Oh, God.
Do you usually have to take time off to have sex, James or
yes,
Jane?
I do. It takes a very long time, Nick. I have to book it in, book a bit of holiday around it.
It's, take a run-up.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah.
Well, I've got the whole entire week off after next week.
Have you? What are you doing?
Things, I don't know yet.
All right.
Maybe going on a mini break.
Oh, you should do that. That'd be nice. Like a little city break, romantic city break.
Because everyone
somewhere.
Keeps telling me I look like I need a holiday. I'm like, yay, you're just thinking so you look like a holiday.
You should go to Bruges. That's beautiful.
But expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
You might be able to get a last minute deal. What about Birmingham?
No.
Apparently it's been taken over by Muslims. Should we talk about this week's comics?
I haven't finished giving Jane a city break.
James, do you want to talk about this week's comics?
Yes.
Hang on. Sorry, hell. this is we have issues. We talk about comics. This week we're on a slightly abbreviated timescale for various reasons, none of which are anybody's damn business, all right?
I don't even know.
Yeah, secret.
I know, it's secret.
It's not a good secret.
I know.
So, we talk about comics. You can listen to all of our past episodes at the site, which is wehaveissues.net, or using your podcatcher of choice. I like Pocket Casts, which now has an online app, which you can use, which is really nice. James, you use?
Blam Podcasts.
Blam Podcasts, yeah. Which I think you just made up.
No.
Really?
Yeah, real thing.
That's a real thing?
No.
And Jane?
The podcast app on my iPhone.
She uses the podcast app on her iPhone, which is good.
I have mine posted to me.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. In via Royal Mail?
Transcripts, yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, you can listen to any past episodes there. There are full show notes for every single episode. Obviously, this is going to be a quick episode, hopefully, so there won't be as many notes. We're going to do a Max Headroom Blipvert-style review thing. For people who were alive in the 80s and watched Max Headroom. That probably means your head's going to explode, listener.
That's Scanners.
No, it happens in Max Headroom as well. Okay. Advertising so fast it makes your head explode. 2000 AD, Prog 1914, Judge Dredd Dark Justice continues to be great. I still haven't read anything else in there yet.
Okay.
That's that one.
God, that was a Very really good quick, micro, very good.
I like that.
The Autumnland Tooth and Claw number 3. It's had to change name from Tooth and Claw because apparently there was another Image comic called Tooth and Claw, but everyone had forgotten. It's written by Kurt Busiek with art by Benjamin Dewey and colour by Jordi Belair. It's still $2.99 from Image Comics. It's an amazing comic about this. Is it the future? Is it the past? World where all of the people, are like, everyone lives in these floating cities, and they're all kind of animals, and they the magic's running out, so they decide they need to get this hero from the past, and everyone thinks, oh, all of the dog people think, oh, it's a dog person. All of the owl people think, oh, it's definitely an owl person. It turned out in the second issue it was a person.
Ooh.
So we're not sure if in the distant past it's our time, or in the future, it's all very confusing.
I like the sound of owl people, though.
It's pretty cool. It's a really, really good comic, and there's all sorts of machinations going on. The writing's really good. Kurt Busiek is really, really good at comics anyway. The real... Jordi Belair's colours are always great and always do a really good job of servicing the artist. In this particular case, Benjamin Dewey is the real standout thing about it because I've never seen his art before, and it is gorgeous. It's really rich and as realistic as it's possible to get, a sort of a fantasy epic comic where one of the main characters is sort of humanoid but with a one of those weird terriers with the little tiny eyes. Faces.
Oh God, sounds terrifying.
You know that they're kind of they're not really they're a dog, but they don't really look like a dog because they've got those weird, like sort of cone faces. Do you know the what they're like?
Yeah, like Dan Aykroyd.
New York, Boston Terriers are
that's
they?
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Like Dan Aykroyd. They look
that,
like Dan Aykroyd.
That was his head, wasn't it?
All right, okay. One of the other comics I got this week, is a number one from Valiant?
Yeah, it's Valiant, isn't it?
I think it's Valiant.
I think of Valiant Comics.
It's one of another one of those words I'm not very good at. It's $3.99. It is written by Fred Van Lent with art by Clayton Henry and colour by Brian Reba. It is called Ivar, Time Walker. Ivar the name, I-V-A-R. Time Walker. It opens at the CERN reactor. There's a young female physicist who is about to do something exciting, and then this odd and very strikingly handsome guy turns up and says, "You have to come with me. You're not safe. There are going to be people trying to kill you." And she says, "But why? And who are you, you crazy man? And why do you know my name?" Because he knows her name, and he says, "Well, you're going to invent time travel." And she says, "I'm not even trying to invent time travel." And then they go on a time travel adventure, and these baddies called the Prometheans come after them.
Oh, from Alien, right?
Yeah, from Alien. And it's really nice. The art's really, like, crisp, and it's not really realistic. It's sort of a... It's just really, really nice art that is... An awful way to describe art, but it's beautiful. It's proper. Look, I'll show you this and the noises you make.
Oh,
that's interesting.
It's kind of a progression of the almost realistic art style that Image, a lot of the Image artists were doing in the 90s.
Yeah, like,
that's kind of
Morning Glories. Who's the Yeah,
it's art by Clayton Henry, who I haven't seen before. It's a really nice looking comic,
reminiscent of Morning Glories and Mind the Gap and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
that's currently on Image.
Really clear line and the
very flat colours.
It's really nice colours. Just a really nice presentation. I get the feeling all of Valiant's books are really gorgeous. Anyway, they do really nice presentation work.
Mm.
The story is really interesting. They do some really fun things with time travel. This is going to be like a time-hopping epic.
Mm.
I like the version of time travel they seem to be working towards in this, and the two leads are very likable so far. The man is dashing, but also you can't really trust him. He's Ivar. I guess it's Ivar.
I can't think of that name without thinking of Ivar Biggin. It's awful.
And Ivar the Engine a little bit as well.
Oh, see, that's not where I go first.
Two things I really wanted to mention, though, is I quite like the Valiant universe. It's
you're going to have to pick one of those. You
it,
know
it,
that
it feels like it feels like they've. It's like a car crash of certain things that you can that comic companies have been doing for a really long time. But like, so it's a shared universe, kind of. The books, all of the different disparate books, clearly exist in the same universe, and this is a line that had its time in the 90s and then kind of came back recently. But none of them seem to be straightforward spandex superheroes. So you've got, like, they've made a point of some of them are like, far future or, like, vaguely orientalist. There's a proper word for it. It isn't. It's like a cultural appropriation thing.
Oriental is offensive.
I mean, it's very. It's like this Neo Tokyo style vision of the future with a guy who's with a guy who's like a futuristic samurai who might be a bit roboted. His name's Rai, and it's kind of so. Literally, what I mean is, it's an American comic that's borrowing very heavily from Japanese imagery and cultural ideas. And then there's this, which is much more of just a straightforward science fiction-y, time travel-y thing. And they've got all sorts of different, these different books. They've got like their immortal guy who has a healing factor and stuff. So they're not superhero comics, but they still all exist in this shared universe, and it's quite interesting. And the way that works in this is they're hopping through time, and they share the universe in that way that we all really liked when we were reading comics in the 80s, where you'll see a character from another comic turning up in the background, but it won't intrude on the story. You won't necessarily need to know. There's this feeling of a shared universe. It's really good. And I really like this comic. The only thing I'm not sure of is the female lead, whose name is Dr. Neela Sethi. She's a really interesting character. She's a professional physicist. She's female. She's, I guess, Indian. Looking at the art and looking at her name, she's Indian. She's all of these really interesting things, but she's kind of Fred Van Lent can't help but write, but let Joss Whedon style tropes enter into it. So there are two or three cultural references that just stick out. Like on the first page, she's talking to herself while she's in a room by herself. She says the time. She says European Central Time. She announces what she's playing. End of the music. She says changes Bowie on the iTunes. Check. Time is check. And she's doing all of these things, and I get the feeling for a lot of people that's going to be really, they're going to be like, oh, this is cool. I like this. This is referring to things I really like. But I'm reading it thinking, no one walks around announcing what they're going to listen to when they're in a room by themselves.
When I came out of the house today, I actually said to myself, pick up iPhone, shuffle about morosely to Rush. Check.
Oh, okay. So maybe you do. You see, this is the thing. This is where I'm a bit cynical, maybe. But it just that there are those little things that sneak into the writing that I find a little bit twee.
Mm-hmm.
There's a an airplane reference, which I am slammed into the demographic to appreciate an airplane reference, but it just made me think, oh, that's an airplane reference.
Surely you can't be serious.
It was exactly that airplane reference.
Of course it was.
But it's a really good. It is a really good comic. I really like it. I will try and pick up the next one. I'm finding it's really difficult to get second issues when you don't have a standing order to speak of.
I'd recommend Comixology.
Yeah, I know you would. The other comic I bought this week, the other number one I bought this week that I really, really liked, it's $3.99 from Boom. I've seen a lot of people sharing this tweet today saying all of the best comics aren't coming out from Marvel and DC, they're coming out from Image. And yet again, I'm thinking, you know, there are more than three comic publishers. There are loads of them, and Boom are doing amazing stuff at the moment. This is called Burning Fields. It's written by Michael Morikai and Tim Daniel, illustrated by Colin Lorimer, who draws in this, again, really stylized, but the faces and everything are really realistic, and the acting in it is great. The characters are consistent throughout. It's a thriller. We are introduced really, really quickly to the idea that it's a real-world thriller, that might have supernatural elements to it. We're introduced really early to the fact there are ritualistic killings happening in the Middle East. I think it's in Iraq, actually. And, yeah, it's in Iraq. And so we see a murder happening. There's ritualistic elements to it. And then we're introduced to a character who in Chicago, a female character in Chicago, who's maybe a law...
Driving a lorry?
No, she's maybe a law... She's involved with the police, but she's also kind of involved with criminals. And you get a really sketchy sense of, you know, that she's walking a line, but you're not entirely sure about it, because really this is just where she is at the moment. She's being told off. She's being admonished by a friend of hers saying, you know, you're playing things a bit too close to the line, but you don't really know what's going on there, because quickly you find that she's being dragged in to the situation that's happening in Iraq as a specialist in stuffs. It's kind of difficult to explain, because this first issue is really dense, and there are a few balls up in the air in it, but what you've got is this character, this American character in Chicago, who apparently used to be military, now for various reasons isn't, and the reason she left the military now are like private security operatives, mm-hmm. in Iraq. There's very much this backdrop of all of these private security firms that we hear a lot about in the Middle East, who have taken over from things that the military are doing, but might not be that moral about it.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's an Iraqi detective who gets introduced into this, who is trying to investigate one of the ritualistic murders himself. By the end of the issue, a lot of these characters have met each other, and they've also encountered the private security firm. But what you get is, it's like this crime thriller that's in a really different setting from what you're used to, with really different characters than you're used to seeing together. And this real underlying idea of moral compromise, everyone's having to compromise because the situation is so tenuous in this Iraqi town, and nobody trusts the private security firms, and it seems to be with good reason. There's a very strong suggestion. They don't know who's done the murders, but they're pretty certain it's an American from one of the oil fields there. So there's this sort of really difficult diplomatic situation they're all having to navigate through. And the Iraqi in particular is a really interesting character, because he knows that even though it's his country and these crimes are happening in his country and he wants to protect his people, that the private security firm could just cause so much trouble for them, and could, you know, they're the ones who have the real power. It's a really good comic, Burning Fields. It's gorgeous, very dark comic as well in terms of the art, but it's just very, very nice and very different from everything else.
Cool.
James.
Hiya. I've been looking at books on Comixology.
You love Comixology.
Two books. First one is from Image Comics. I believe it was £2.49. Ooh. And it's called Ren. And it's kind of set in, it wasn't clear to start with. Why is that unguided for you now? I have no idea.
This is the Comixology
thing. Yeah. let me sort that out, because that's not gonna work for me at all. Why is it unguided for you? Anyway, so, no, that didn't work. It starts off, there's kind of a cold open, so we're introduced to Ren, in an action scene. He's, kind of like this futuristic warrior. He's just sort of not futuristic. He's kind of reminiscent of Conan, but the book itself is set in a very odd sort of dystopian style future. It's not clear whether it's Earth or not. where clearly there's been some cataclysm. People have moved away from technology and there's a more sort of medieval existence, although there are some very strange creatures, which leads you to believe it's sort of more of a fantasy land than a dystopian Earth. So this cold open, we see him in action. He's a swordsman that clearly is being guided by some force that we see him muttering about. And then essentially the rest of the story is him palling up with the character Steph, she's called, who I suspect will be his partner throughout the ongoing series, and she's part of a organization called a guild or something called the Followers of Tech.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they're these people that they're seen as sort of strange heretics, and actually the people who react to Steph treat her very much as a witch. So instead of, I think what's going to happen here, or what it feels like, is instead of magic, they're going to use technology and have basically the same effect that it would have in a sort of standard sword and sorcery backdrop. So it's written by Kel Simons with art by Nate Stockman. Very similar style to the one that you were describing earlier as well. Sort of thick line, quite matte colouring, which works very, very well. It's not my favourite style. I like a slightly looser... In these sort of comics, I like a slightly looser line. In my European books,
mm-hmm.
in my European books, not so much. It's set up quite nicely for an ongoing series. There's some intrigue and so forth. It's a bit saucy at times. You don't see any nipples, so it's not like page three. But there's sort of the.
Is that the scale?
Yeah, absolutely. But okay. the women in this are kind of how you would expect women in a Conan style adventure to be, which was, to be honest with you, the cold open was a little bit jarring in terms of there's a little bit of Ren ends up at a farmhouse and saves them from a giant spider, and there's this weird frisson between him and the farmer's daughter. And there's this one point, and they're all around the dinner table, and there's action lines around her boobs to show that they're wobbling a little bit.
Oh my goodness, that is bawdy.
Which was a little bit jarring to me, but otherwise it's a nicely written, a nicely finished book.
There's lots of weird sort of sci-fi fantasy world building going on at the moment, which is normally the sort of thing I hate. But I seem to be reading a few books that are like that, and you're as well. Lots of comics written by people who clearly enjoyed role-playing when they were younger and are using those archetypes and stuff again now. Did you like it as much as Rat Queens?
It's difficult to compare the two because obviously Rat Queens, the problem I had with Rat Queens was that I hadn't read any of the previous books. They're kind of... I think I probably enjoyed them about the same.
All right.
You know, I'll probably go back to it. The other book that I read is from IDW, so I'm not who are also producing from time to time some very interesting books.
Oh yes,
so not an image hipster. This I believe cost me like $1.99. It was cheaper than I'd expect to buy it in a comic book shop, and it is the first issue of the first ever ongoing series of Zombies versus Robots.
Amazing and terrifying.
It is. It was. I think you'd half like it and you'd half hate it.
Isn't that what you expect from a book, to provoke two emotions at the same time?
At least two emotions. If it doesn't have at least two emotions in, it's just not worth bothering with.
And in the back of the book, Steve Niles talks about sort of like the genesis of it. So I think it's been going for about 10 years on and off in sort of short. Yeah.
But, I like Steve Niles. I would definitely be picking this book up.
And you've got two stories in here. One written by Steve Niles, which is the main story called Inherit the Earth, and a second written by Chris Ryle called The Orphan. And you've got art by Anthony Desadieu, Val Mayerick, and Ashley Wood. It's got a beautiful painted cover
nice.
As well. Yeah, it's
really nice.
I think initially Zombies versus Robots was an Ashley Wood pet project with either
Steve
Chris Ryle or... Yeah, with Steve Niles. And so,
does a beautiful painted cover for it. It's lovely. Not the interior art. The interior art on the first story is Anthony Desadieu, and the second is Ashley Wood. So the first story is essentially setting up the universe, and it treats you as if you are a brand new reader, which I am to the universe. But it's really interesting. It's narrated, but it's narrated by a sentient probe that's visiting the Earth. set in the dystopian future.
So it is Earth, then?
It is Earth.
Okay.
But basically nothing lives on the planet except these weird zombies, who it would appear may have become sentient. But essentially it would sound awful to say the robot basically provides, about 16 pages of exposition, which it kind of does, but it does so in a very entertaining way. It's also the whole way through, it's communicating with, it's not clear who it's communicating to, who it's reporting back to. So some mysteries set up as well. You know, you've got the classic shadowed figure appears in here as well, which, you know, comics have used that trope to fine effect over many, many years. The second story is virtually wordless, and it's set at a time when humans were still fighting the zombies, and it features a young orphan child who's tried to create a robot of their own to defend against the zombies. And obviously the story as a whole revolves around these scientists who basically created they created a gateway, which then created the zombies because an infection came back through a gateway, and then they invented sentient robots that basically killed everything rather than just the zombies.
So the robots are supposed to be good and the zombies are supposed to be the bad.
Yeah,
ones.
But it's really, you it's know, so the lines are blurred. Kind of
it's like bad. The weirdest comic. It's got nothing, and like there are no characters. Well, there are characters, but there are no characters. It is very, very strange. It's they set out from the beginning by killing all the humans and making them irrelevant.
Ryle refers to that. I mean, it sounds like it was as much as anything for the two of them. It was a challenge, and making these sort of putting these obstacles in their way was part of the fun. He refers to that, and I think we're going to see some human characters, just because you need someone to hang on to drive.
Because it's not like the same robots all the time either. That's the thing. They quite often die too.
Yeah.
And the zombies are already dead. Yeah. It's very odd. I like it a lot, but it's very weird.
It's got a really weird feeling to it. The art as well, on both stories, absolutely gorgeous. Much looser, much more impressionistic style, especially in the first story. It is beautiful. I really enjoyed it, and will be getting the next issue because I want to see where it goes once I work out how to turn off guided view. It was fine earlier. I like to...
Stupid comics.
Move it.
I like Comixology on the iPad because it's the right size for a comic book page, but I like to view the whole page, and I do find some of the controls on Comixology troublesome. However, I do not find purchasing them online and then viewing them in the app, I don't find it that clunky, which I think was my worry early on. But yeah, two interesting books, one I really enjoyed and one I didn't dislike it at all.
More generic, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. That's literally it.
Microcast.
That might be our shortest.
I actually feel dizzy because I don't think I breathed very much during that.
I didn't breathe very much through yours either.
No, I'll breathe for the both of you.
I didn't breathe very much during yours, but that's because I was trying to kill myself.
It sounds like I'm going to be giving birth to both of you. Listener, Nick and James are not in my womb.
We're already born.
They're already born. Not by me, by other people.
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there. Well, I was, but only for part of it.
I was born by my mum.
I don't feel like I've given birth ever.
Well, it would have been a very long time ago.
You never had a tricky poo with edges? Because I'm sure that's what it...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, James. That's exactly what childbirth feels like.
I've had poos where I feel like I might need a stitch or two in after.
I think tricky poos with edges might be the pinnacle of this episode.
It's just a dream.
We should probably quit while we're ahead. Thank you, listener. You've been awesomely patient. It's weird saying that someone's patient for having a shorter episode than normal.
And they might be very impatient about it. They might actually at this point go, "You joking? This is it."
Just as I was getting going.
Yeah, literally, we've done all of our joking. That was earlier.
I like an hour and a half, they might be saying.
Thanks, you guys, because this is entirely on me. The length of this episode is entirely on me.
That's good.
But we are going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Bye.
Bye.